Hello everyone, my name is William Bulita and I'm with 1180 WFYL, working for your liberty. And today I'm joined with Judge Cheryl Allen and Susan Locke, who is also a member of 1180 WFYL. And before we begin, I just would like you to go over your background and what makes you who you are today.
Well, my relationship with Jesus Christ makes me who I am today. It wasn't always that way. I think I was sharing with you before we went on air that there was a time in my adult life when I would have been considered to the left of Bernie Sanders and AOC. I was really a hardcore leftist, and I belonged to some pretty radical women's groups, and that gave me an opportunity to travel around the world and meet a lot of people, such as the first female astronaut, Valentina Tereshkova, and people like that, because of my involvement with a women's group in the United States that was affiliated with the Women's International Democratic Federation. So I was invited to what was then the Soviet Union, because the Soviet Women's Committee was affiliated. And so I've had a chance to visit the Soviet Union 4 times.
Wow.
And to visit most Eastern European countries, as well as some Western European countries, because the Women's International Democratic Federation involved and included women's groups from all over the world. So I was active in the peace movement. I've marched in peace marches, and I belong to a women's group called Women for a Meaningful Summit. And so I was able to, with this group, attend the summit meeting in Geneva, Switzerland in 1985, when President Reagan met with Gorbachev, and then I subsequently met with him in Reykjavik, Iceland, and so I was there.
Mm-hmm.
And so like Forrest Gump.
Yeah. God was setting you up from the beginning.
Yeah, little did I know. Little did I know. And so when I look back over my life and I look at the life that I have now, mm-hmm. I mean, it really is a miracle.
Yeah.
Because only the power of the Holy Spirit
right.
can bring that much change in
exactly.
a person.
Yeah.
But that's what happened. So people who knew me back when say, what happened to you? But that's what happened.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. Mm-hmm.
And I've been reading J.K. Chesterton. You've probably read him, or maybe heard of him at least. One of my favorite quotes from him is, the best way to look at something is either from the inside looking out, just putting in perspective what it is like without that organization or that thing being in existence, or from the outside looking in. And I think the fact that you were looking in on something and you had this perspective from the beginning of, oh, well, I might be, yes, far left, more left than AOC or Bernie Sanders, but there was a reason why God put you in that position. And I think that that's amazing. So the next question that I have for you is, I know that Susan was telling me about how you're very passionate about pro-life. Would you be willing to maybe speak about some of the things that you've done in that aspect? I know that you've kind of gotten into telling your story. Maybe just kind of lead into how you actually arrived at this position in your life and how God has really lit the Holy Spirit inside of you and the courage and the passion for such things.
Well, you know, even during my left-wing days, because, you know, women on the left, people in the women's movement, were always very pro-abortion.
Mm-hmm.
And they somehow seemed to believe that a woman's right to have an abortion on demand was absolutely essential if she was going to be truly liberated
right.
and free and mm-hmm. able to progress in life the same way a man can progress career-wise and socially. Now, I've never completely embraced that point of view. I would have told you, however, before my conversion, that I felt that it was up to an individual woman to choose.
Mm-hmm.
I would have said, maybe I don't know if I could do that. Even then, I didn't know if I could do that. But I certainly would never have stood in the way or spoken against someone else's right to make that decision. However, again, when I came to know the Lord and I became convicted, you know, and I always tell people that there's a difference between having an opinion.
Right.
Because before my conversion, I had many opinions about many things. But there's a difference between an opinion and a conviction.
Right.
Because we can change our opinions mm-hmm. about things, but our convictions change us.
Right.
And so once I was changed, the challenge that I faced was when I was a juvenile court judge in the 90s, from about 1992 until 2004.
Wow.
I served in the juvenile court section of the family division in the Court of Common Pleas of Allegheny County. And it was sometime in the 90s, and I can't remember the exact year, but the Pennsylvania legislature passed legislation that allowed for a teenager to bypass parental consent to get an abortion.
Wow.
Under the Abortion Control Act, you must be 18 to get an abortion. If you're under the age of 18, you needed parental consent. So arguing that some girls shouldn't have to go to their parents, it might result in their being put out of the house,
right.
or beaten or punished.
So,
we're going to pass a law that allows them to bypass parental consent. And the way they would do that is you go to school, I assume, go to see the school nurse. The school nurse puts you in touch with Planned Parenthood or someone from the Women's Law Center. They draw up a petition, bring it into juvenile court
mm-hmm.
before the judge. And the judge is supposed to conduct a hearing to determine whether or not that young lady is mature enough to make her own decision. And if the judge determines that she's not mature enough, then the judge is given the responsibility of making a decision which the judge believes to be in her best interest. Now, that was problematic to me.
Yes.
Very, very much so. First of all, these girls would come in under Jane Doe.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm supposed to make this decision for a young lady whose name I don't even know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But even aside from that, I'm supposed to decide whether you're mature enough to make your own decision. Accordingly, I would sign an order. This girl would go to the abortion clinic, to a Planned Parenthood, presumably get an abortion. Parents would not know about it. Parents didn't even have the right to know their child was pregnant. And if something happened, like a pregnancy complication or some other complication, failed abortion or a botched abortion,
right,
and this child suffered severe injury, mm-hmm, parents wouldn't even know. I mean, the abortion clinic can always deny liability because she can't even there under the name of Jane Doe.
Right.
And I also saw it as a mechanism for covering up rape, for covering up child molestation,
correct,
for covering up incest, for covering up sex trafficking,
right,
and a host of things. And so, I mean, I struggled. I can't do this.
Mm-hmm.
And I could not do it. And of course, because I could not do it, I suffered some bad publicity and persecution, especially when I decided to run for an appellate court and run statewide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was an issue through a smear whispering campaign against me.
Mm-hmm.
But that's when my faith was really put to the test. So.
Yeah. And you would imagine that the custody of the child would be with the parents, right? So in my mind, that's like, all right. So the custody is with the parents. So the child is living in their parents' house, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're pregnant and their parents have no idea.
Right.
So
you don't have a right to know, according to these people.
There has to be someone with, I mean, well, you are that person, but there has to be someone else that is like, oh my gosh, this is wrong. Like in the first place, morally, they're living in their household. They are their child and they're making these decisions and they're deciding to hide it from their parents. To me, that's wrong.
But see, that's what's going on across the board today.
Right.
I mean, we have children going to school, making a decision that they want to transition. And we have schools, you know, your little girl
taking custody
to the school as Samantha, mm-hmm, and they allow her to change her clothes to a boy, to dress like a boy and take the name Sam, and they use that name all during the school day, and they even conceal this from the parents.
Yeah.
So one of the things that we know for certain is this idea of weakening parent-child relationship, weakening the authority parents have over their children,
mm-hmm,
is growing stronger and stronger, and
right,
it's by design.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Because the effort is to destroy the family,
that's right,
which is the bedrock of our society.
Exactly.
And it's not by accident that
right,
this is happening, it's by design.
Mm-hmm.
It's by a long-held plan, because you destroy the family unit, you weaken and ultimately destroy society.
Mm-hmm.
Could you share with our listeners, Judge Allen, the quotes that you shared this morning in the conference about Marx,
mm-hmm,
Marx and Lenin?
Yes. Marx, Karl Marx, who lived back in the 1800s, said that his primary goal in life was to dethrone God and to destroy capitalism. And since that time, you know, we've had Vladimir Lenin, who said, you know, give me the children for 4 years and the seed I plant will never be uprooted.
Right.
And then we had Nikita Khrushchev, and I remember when he came to the United States.
I did too.
And he basically talked about how you Americans will never accept communism, but we'll feed it to you in small doses. And before you know it, by the time you wake up, this is what you're going to have. Now, we had Antonio Gramsci, who was considered to be the father of cultural Marxism.
Okay.
And the idea being that communism took over in Russia, became the Soviet Union, it took over in Cuba, and other countries through an armed revolution. But they understood that that was not something that was practical in the United States, because you had this huge middle class of people who were basically content
right,
with their station in life.
Exactly.
Right.
So the more effective way to bring in a revolution is by changing the culture.
Mm-hmm.
So you take over the education system, mm-hmm, the media.
Making people dissatisfied
yes,
with where they are.
You make people dissatisfied. You create division and discontent. You know, I heard someone say DEI, diversity, what is it called? Diversity.
Equity and inclusion.
Equity and inclusion. Well, the true definition is division, exclusion, and indoctrination.
That's great.
That's right. That's exactly right.
And that is what they are about.
Yeah.
Dividing people.
That's true.
So that people are defined by what they look like,
right,
not by what they believe. You're defined by what you look like, how much melanin is in your skin, or how you express yourself
right,
sexually,
right,
but you're not defined by the content of your character.
Exactly.
And that is the enemy's plan for bringing down this society. So we see it, this mindset, actively in our school system, active in our universities and colleges,
right,
and even to some degree in our churches,
mm-hmm, yeah,
yes,
and throughout society.
Mm-hmm.
So you take over a country by changing the culture. So it's cultural Marxism, and it's a cultural revolution. And I heard someone say, in a cultural revolution, the first casualty is the truth.
Right.
And so that's why even in the abortion industry, they've taken truth and turned it on its head.
Right.
So abortion, something that kills, is healthcare.
Right.
Something that kills is reproductive freedom. That kind of thing. And it's taking the truth and surrounding the truth by a bodyguard of lies and convincing people that this is the truth. So,
and repeating those lies over and over.
Repeating those lies, like Lennon said, if you tell a lie often enough, repeat a lie often enough, it becomes the truth in people's minds. And that's what we see. That's what we see in our news media.
Right.
This is why I tell people, turn off the television. If you depend upon the mainstream media for your source of your information, you are, number one, uninformed because they only tell you what they want you to hear. And number two, you are misinformed because what they do tell you is often not true.
You're choosing to be indoctrinated. That's really what it is. It's consensual indoctrination.
That's right.
That's where we're at.
That's exactly where we are at.
Yeah.
And our education centers have become indoctrination centers.
Right.
So our children are being taught what to think rather than how to think.
Right. Yeah. I mean, Glenn Beck has this saying, and I'm probably going to butcher it, but it's bottom up, inside out, top down, or something like that. But it just kind of outlines really how the cultural revolution operates and how it's meant to really flip everything on its head, to make good evil, and to make evil good. And we see that clearly in abortion, in LGBTQ practices, in like the pride flag, for example. I mean, that's clearly evil, but the White House is advertising it.
Oh, yeah.
And I think at this point, you see that the White House is a full-time narrative pusher when it comes to cultural revolutions, whether it be Black Lives Matter, LGBTQ pride, all transitioning, and is focused on normalizing these inherently evil things and making them good. And I think that, yeah, you're spot on when you're saying that this is where we're at in terms of a cultural revolution and the process for them taking over our countries to get rid of truth. I just want to ask you a quick question. So I know that you've been a judge for, it seems like, a very, very long time.
25 years.
Okay. That's a long time. That's longer than I've been alive, so that's a long time. But I guess my question is, have you ever, early on when you first got into being a judge in law in general, did you think about abortion when you first started doing it?
Absolutely not.
Did you think that you would be fighting these battles when you first started?
Absolutely not.
Did you see yourself in this position?
No, okay. I did not.
So
I did not. And you know,
yeah.
But as I think back, even in my ultra-left days,
right.
I always had this hunger to know the truth. Like, what is truth? Okay, so I grew up I was in high school and college in the 60s. I participated in my first demonstration in 1968 when the Black students at Penn State took over Old Main.
Oh my gosh.
And so I was into the civil rights movement. I had my Afro hairstyle and the whole nine yards. But, you know, you reach a point where you say, well, this can't be true.
Right.
And then move from that into left-wing politics because I had an uncle and a father, both of which eventually became card-carrying members of the Communist Party. And I also had an uncle, their brother, who was a pastor, whose church I was required to go to when I was a child. And there were problems there because it wasn't really a true Bible-believing Christ is, Jesus is God, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
So I gravitated toward my uncle, who was a communist, because I felt that what he was proposing seemed to be more equitable and just. And that's the problem today. You know, a lot of people see things that way.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is that man can fix things, can fix what's wrong with this world. But man cannot create utopia.
Right.
Man is fallen and without Christ has no righteousness. And man cannot create utopia. But what you see today is people saying that we have to fix this. We have to eliminate racism. We have to eliminate sexism. We have to eliminate whatever the ism is. And racism, sexism, ethnic partiality is sin.
Right.
Man cannot eliminate sin. Only Jesus can do that.
So that's why you had to come here in the first place.
That's
why we celebrate Easter. I mean, I know that Easter in general is a holiday. I know that this is, I'll let you continue, but I know that Easter is I wouldn't say it's controversial, but I feel like it's been so secularized with bunnies.
Like Christmas.
Yeah, exactly. Like Christmas.
Like Christmas.
Yeah, and I feel like we lose sight of the more solemn aspect of it and how Jesus did die for us, but he rose again. And that's something we should celebrate.
Right.
And that's why we celebrate Easter.
But the world wants to celebrate man and promote humanism. And unfortunately, we have too many people in the church, not the true church, but what we call the church, or what we've come to see as the church, or what we're being told as the church, putting forth this man-centered gospel.
Right.
Like the social justice gospel or the prosperity gospel. And the gospel doesn't need an adjective. It stands on its own.
Right. It's great that you were searching for truth because Jesus says, I am the way, the truth, and life. Right. Yeah. So that, in the beginning, that's setting you up for success. I mean, God's giving you that.
And I really believe that because I had this hunger. I want to know what the truth is.
Right.
Okay. So this civil rights movement, as it's being put forth, is not answering all the questions that I have.
Mm-hmm.
certainly socialism, communism didn't answer all the questions that I had. I mean, even in Russia, I saw the elite leaders of the party living. I mean, I never saw any abject poverty when I was in Russia or the Soviet Union, but I did see that the elite lived differently and had more privileges than the masses. And that's the same thing that's going on in this country, increasingly.
And you have that perspective, which is great.
So you see that, and so you see, well, this can't be it. So I've always had this hunger. I want to know what the truth is. And I think, I know that the Lord really showed me what the truth is, and Jesus is the truth.
And isn't it interesting that the truth is so twisted these days, that gaslighting is going on. Right. What you see with your eyes tell is true.
Yes. Right.
They're telling you it isn't.
Right.
They're feeding you lies. It's,
I mean, there's always that picture that comes into my head when you talk about gaslighting.
Yes.
Of someone saying, oh yeah, it's perfectly peaceful in the 2020 riots. And there's a car burning behind them.
Right.
Yeah, that's totally peaceful.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that was kind of the beginning for me of like, oh dang, they really are just going to say this stuff right in front of us and it's happening behind them.
Yeah, you don't really see this, say.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or to the extent that you saw the car bombing and the fires and the rioting,
it was peaceful.
That's justified.
Right.
You know.
And then January 6th, it's like, oh yeah, it was an incarceration. Yeah.
Well, meanwhile, they took over 6 city square blocks.
Right.
And I never heard the word insurrection.
Chaz.
Until January 6th. But anyway.
Exactly. But that's right. That Chaz. Yeah.
In order to have an insurrection, don't
right.
need weapons, guns.
Yeah. It needs to be like a total overthrowing, a mutiny,
right.
if you will. But yeah, I didn't. What I did see, because I will disclose a little bit, I was at January 6th. So what I saw was there was a group of people who did have that kind of stuff on, and then there was another group of people who didn't, and it looked like they were just there to stand up for what they believed in, right? So from my perspective, it's like, okay, that is definitely a setup. When you have people who are there with malintent, right? They're there just because, and they look like they're not trying to be there for a just cause, right? And then you have the people that are there that look like normal people. So, I mean, you have that clear difference, and like you were saying, it's making you think that something happened when it didn't actually happen,
right.
And I think that element there felt weird. It just set off a bunch of red lights in my head, and I'm like, all right, what the heck's up here?
Well, a lot of times when people ask me, well, what do you think is going on, say, in Denver, what do you
right.
think is going on here, or what do you think is going on there?
Right.
And my response is usually, I don't really know. And it's
yeah.
only one thing that I know for certain.
Right.
And that is that we're not being told the truth.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. Right.
So it's very hard to I know that we're not being told the truth about what's going on
exactly.
anywhere.
That's right.
Susan, you had something you wanted to say?
I just wanted to kind of circle back to the abortion. You said that you were in D.C. last week.
I was in Washington, D.C. I was there for the case that was brought against the FDA
okay.
regarding the abortion pill, the abortion drugs. And the argument, and it was brought by a group of medical doctors.
Yeah.
And their concern was, when the abortion pill was first introduced, I think it was about 16 years ago, there was a 4-part process that a woman had to go through.
Mm-hmm.
First, she had to undergo a medical examination by a physician, undergo an ultrasound to make sure that her pregnancy, mm-hmm. because initially, you could only take the abortion pill at 7 weeks or so. So she had to undergo the ultrasound, she had to undergo the physical exam, then they would administer the first pill,
mm-hmm.
and you've heard the ladies testify that that's the one that causes the baby to starve of, mm-hmm. I think it was progesterone. And then some period later, they give the second pill, and that's what causes the baby to be expelled, you know, and that's what causes the bleeding and all of that. And then after that, there was a final physical examination to make sure that everything that was supposed to be expelled from the body was expelled. Because if you had body parts left
right.
in the womb, it could be very
yeah.
dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was the process. Well, sometime after COVID, you know, they blamed COVID for everything. Sometime after COVID, they did away with those safeguards, with that
mm-hmm.
process.
Right.
And they started the telemedicine process.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the telemedicine process simply means, and I am familiar with telemedicine because I was able to use it during COVID to get the medications that I needed. You know, you call doctor. I think a frontline doctor's had a system like this. You call a doctor. You're interviewed over the phone.
Right.
So the doctor only knows what you tell him or her.
Right.
You tell them when your last period was. You tell them they form, I guess, a medical opinion that you're 6 or 7 weeks pregnant or whatever. And they write a prescription, which can be mailed to your house. And then you take these pills and you have your abortion alone without any medical supervision. Since some states have more restrictive abortion laws than others, that's one reason why they allow it to be mailed. Because you can get the pill through telemedicine, have it mailed to you, and then you perform your own abortion by taking these pills unsupervised. And there's been a tremendous increase in women reporting to the emergency room. I mean, a woman's health is very, you know, from people who claim to be all about women's health.
Yeah, exactly.
Women's health is really jeopardized through this process.
Where's the health care?
So that's what they're doing. That's what the abortion. And you heard the ladies talk today. More than 60% now of all the abortions in Pennsylvania
right.
are performed using these abortion drugs. So you don't need a doctor. You don't need a medical exam. If you're Rh negative, you don't need to take that medicine that women have to take after their first pregnancy. I mean, the whole thing. And so women's lives are being jeopardized.
Right.
So now, you know, whereas abortion, they used to say we wanted to be safe, legal, and rare. Now it's unsafe and legal, and we don't care.
Common, yeah.
I mean, that's what else can you conclude?
Right, exactly.
Now, they're saying, okay, so we've had these abortion pills for the past 16 years. They've proven to be safe. How do they know? They don't. When the women show up in the hospital emergency room, they're not reporting it as such.
Back to truth, these things don't make any sense, and it's not true.
Truth is the first casualty.
Exactly.
It's the first casualty whenever they want to change the culture.
You made the point this morning also in the conference when you spoke about them saying that the fetus is nothing but a blob of tissue, but
right.
They're using this tissue from other body parts and
right,
so on.
Right. You know, I'm from the city of Pittsburgh, and the University of Pittsburgh has been in the news a lot because of the fetal experiments and because of the harvesting of body parts, where rather than perform the abortion that requires suctioning, which dismembers a baby's body, they're inducing labor so that the body can be born. I mean, the body can come out intact, and they're harvesting organs.
Oh my God.
And so does a glob of tissue have organs?
Exactly.
I mean, you've got to look at it that way. So they know that this is not a glob of tissue.
Right. They know it was alive. They
know it's alive, but they're perpetuating the lies for financial gain.
Yeah, it's not even healthcare at that point. It's just we're going to put you in a position where you can get this abortion, but you know, you'll be getting your abortion, but we'll be making a lot of money in the process.
Two human beings go into the clinic, one comes out.
Exactly. Yes. And
that's exactly right.
I think that when it comes to just humanity in general, any killing, whether you know, it has a soul or not, it's tissue. It's still alive. If it has organs, it was alive, and there's a reason those organs were there. So I don't know. It's just
Reagan, I believe, asked the question. He said, "If you're not sure that something is alive, why would you kill it?"
Exactly. Right.
I'd want to find out if it's alive before I kill it, quote unquote. Right.
And I like what you said. It's not enough to be pro-choice. We must be pro-truth.
Absolutely.
That's really pro-choice. And also, I loved what you said, but we must speak the truth boldly, clearly, and with conviction.
Conviction.
Right.
And compassion.
Yes.
And compassion.
Yes. Conviction and compassion. I didn't say compassion, but I should have.
Compassion is very big, because without compassion, it's hard for you to relate to anyone.
Right.
And I can speak firsthand to that, because my education is very heavily oriented around reading. And I've gotten into the rut where I've just kind of been focusing on myself so much. It's been hard for me to extrovert myself. And today's one of the few days where I actually get to do that. And I feel like I have a God-given gift of being able to be compassionate and relate to people. But recently, I haven't been feeling it as much. And I find it harder for me to want to listen to people, because I find that before I wanted to listen to people and I wanted to understand where they were coming from, and it made the conversations that I had with them more enjoyable for me, because number one, that person has a different perspective that I have. And number two, it's something that needs to be had in a conversation in order for there to be any type of relation between you and the person that's talking. So I think that having the relation, you are a woman and I'm a male, yes, but that doesn't necessarily mean that I can't say, oh, well, that's not morally right. And I think what they'll try to do is they'll try to say, oh, you're a male, you can't tell a woman what to do with their body. I think it goes even deeper than that, and it comes down to morals, because it doesn't matter if I'm a male or if you're a female, but there's a certain level of relation that you have to this woman that's bearing a child. So I think
especially
both interactions.
If it's your child.
Yeah, exactly.
Because that child is carrying your DNA.
Exactly.
Just as her DNA. And yes, she should be able to do what she wants with her body.
Exactly.
But now we're talking about another body.
Exactly.
A separate body.
Yeah.
And that separate body has a different set of DNA.
Right.
That separate body might even have a different blood type.
Right.
But again, you know, we live in a society where human life is disregarded, like ever before.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you this, I served in the criminal court also.
Right.
And I have presided over murder trials. I've presided over trials where children had been killed.
That's intense.
But never did I receive as much negative publicity as I did when I presided over a case where dogs were killed.
No, I
really mean that.
What?
And granted, what happened, we had a situation where a guy considered his neighbor's dogs to be a nuisance because they were always barking.
Right.
And he threw some poisonous meat over the fence and killed both of them. Okay, so he was charged criminally. And when you're a judge, we have sentencing guidelines.
Okay. I didn't know that.
That are given to us. And it's not that you can't go outside of the guidelines, but you have to be able to justify it on the record.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
So the sentencing guidelines call for probation for this guy because he was a first-time offender. I didn't write the guidelines. The legislature wrote the guidelines.
Right.
That's what it called for. So he was fined, told that he couldn't own any animals. I mean, the whole nine yards. But they wanted him jailed. I mean, these, the public, members of the public, they wanted this man jailed. And so I got all these letters to the editor, all these. And I'm thinking to myself, I didn't get this when. When people were,
exactly.
It was just amazing to me.
I've often thought that if the video, even an animated video, were made,
right.
of an abortion, a puppy or kit,
right.
there would be such an outrage.
Yes, mm-hmm. yeah.
There would be such outrage.
Oh, they would never allow that.
Oh, for sure.
They would never allow that.
Yeah.
I know that our vice president, when she's screaming and yelling, she was talking about one time. I heard her talking about how these Second Amendment people, they should be forced to come to the morgue and see these bodies that have been shot and killed. And I said,
okay,
why don't you come to the abortion clinic?
Exactly.
To see these bodies.
Right.
Because, you know, she visited an abortion clinic in, I think it was in Minnesota.
Yeah. Well, that brings me to another thing. I loved your quotes this morning, and I wrote them down. So the last one that I wrote down was, are we going to be complacent, complicit, or courageous?
Those are the words of Erwin Lutzer, who I had the privilege of meeting a couple of years ago.
Really? That's awesome.
Very impressive man. I mean, I really like him. So his thought process. So he said, are we going to be complicit and complacent? Maybe I'm getting those two things wrong. Or are we going to be courageous?
Mm-hmm.
These are times, this is a season
right.
where you're called upon to be courageous.
Yes, we are.
To come out of our comfort zone.
Right.
And stand up for the truth.
Yeah.
And stand up for the belief that human life matters.
Yes.
All human life.
And there is truth.
Pardon?
Coming back to where we started, there is truth.
Right.
There is truth.
Right.
People will say, oh, their truth, their my truth, your truth, which is ridiculous.
Right.
There is truth.
It's not your truth or my truth. Truth is not a thing. Truth is a who.
Right.
Yes. That's right.
Yes.
That's exactly right.
The capital W.
Yes.
Got to get that
yes,
in there.
Indeed.
Yes. So I just have one more question. I know that you've been focused on truth and that you've encountered many interesting cases as you've shared. But if there's one thing that you feel like kind of put life in perspective other than going to Russia, that kind of set you up, you feel like, to move on to finding truth, to finding God. I know that you stated how you were more attracted to your communist part of your family than your Christian part of your family. And I think that it's important to specify that you're not believing in a church. You're not believing in a specific denomination of a church, but you're believing in God and Jesus Christ. But what was that turning point for you that led you to this position where you were actually able to find truth and that you actually found answers?
Well, you know, I have to be honest and say it's not that I found truth. I think truth found me. You know, I think that truth found me. And, you know, one of my favorite songs is The Alabaster Box. And I have even loved singing that song because there's a part in it where it says, I can't forget the way life used to be. I was a prisoner to the sin that had me bound. And I spent my days, poured my life without measure into a little treasure box that I thought I'd found until the day that Jesus came to me and healed my soul with the wonder of his touch. Now I'm giving back to him all the praise he's worthy of. I've been forgiven, and that's why I love him so much. And he forgave me, not because I deserved it, because I did not. Not because I did anything wonderful or great, because I did not. He saved me because it was his sovereign will. And for that, I am eternally grateful. And so when people come to me and talk about white privilege and all of this, I say, he saved me. That's the greatest privilege that anyone could possibly receive.
Right.
You know, so nobody's more privileged than me.
That gives you identity.
Mm-hmm. So. You know, so that's the way I look at it. And, you know, God is sovereign. He saves people.
Right.
He reveals himself to people. And I'm just grateful that he chose me. I didn't choose him. In the state, in my fallen, sinful state, I was not counted.
Right.
You can all say that. Praise him.
For sure.
Praise him.
It's great that you remained open to it, though, because what people will do is they will become so focused on themselves and they'll become so introverted that they don't focus on others and they don't focus on improving as a person and they only focus on pleasuring themselves.
And that's very true. And in my fallen state, that's all I could do. And so, you know, I also tell people that salvation is not about what we do, it's about what he did.
Right.
And so any good things or any good works that I do are a result of my salvation, not the cause
of
my salvation. And so I think people need to be very clear because I hear people all the time talking about, well, I did this and I did that and, you know, I'm worthy of this and I deserve that. I don't deserve anything except the burn in hell, you know. And so any righteousness I have because that's what Jesus, the Lord, attributed to me. And for that,
I appreciate you coming on. It's been a pleasure. It's been a very long conversation. But as always, it's been productive nonetheless. So I appreciate all you've done for this country and your time as a judge.
It's my privilege.
Praise be to God.
Thank you so much, Judge Allen. Thank you, everyone. We've been speaking with Judge Cheryl and Allen, and we thank you so much, as William said, for all you've done and are doing.